RadioInfluence.com. Podcasting redefined.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here as well, keeping us on track. And we are your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us at crushperformance.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter, become a member, and get hooked up with the world of top performers, no matter where you're at and no matter what your sport is. Today, we continue our look into doping in sport, coming off a great conversation last week with Brian Sluggett, sociologist, where he talked about the opportunity or the idea of legalizing certain banned PEDs. It's a conversation that is growing, especially when we look at HGH. Now, the conversation there revolves around player health and player recovery from injury. But it's a slippery slope, and it's not one I think we want to approach. I think if we're really going to look at true, clean sport, we want to take advantage of everything we know about human performance. The biochemistry, which is supplementation and nutrition. We got to look at the sleep science and look at hormone regulation. We got to look at the exercise and training, periodization, and management of the athlete. And I do believe that the athletes who really dedicate themselves to the process and to getting out there and understanding and getting people on their teams that can help them perform at the highest level of sport are the ones that can reap the rewards. Now, I do understand the conversation that revolves around legalizing certain PEDs for player health and recovery from injury. Because if we look at the competitive schedules in professional sports, they have nothing to do with athlete performance. It's a game of survival. But there again, are we opening a Pandora's box if we start talking about legalizing certain PEDs for this, certain PEDs for that? Now, WADA, we had a great conversation with the Director General of WADA last week where we looked at the state of the war on drugs in sport. And are we winning? Are we losing? Well, it's hard to say, but what I can say is in November, the entire Russian Athletic Federation got banned from international competition. In the meantime, we've seen Major League Baseball hand down its first lifetime ban for doping in sport. And right now, Kenya is under the gun for bribery and ethics violations in terms of doping and how they've managed some of their athletes on the international stage. So it was a fantastic conversation with Brian Sluggett and David Howman last week as we took our initial look into doping in sport. Today, we continue the conversation with something I think is very, very important. We are joined by Ben Nichols, the Senior Media Relations Manager for WADA, to talk about athlete options. What can you do? Where can you go to get more information? And what resources are out there for athletes who are trying to cope with the world of highly competitive sport? And coming up later in the show, we delve into the question, to use or not to use. We know that almost every single serious athlete will be touched in some way, shape, or form by PEDs, whether it's a teammate that uses or a competitor, and a lot of athletes will be faced with the moral and ethical dilemma themselves of whether they should use or not use. We'll talk with friend of the show and Crush favorite Garth Orge, former Major League Baseball infielder, played his entire career for the Toronto Blue Jays, went on to coach and manage, and now he works with Major League Baseball internationally, about his dilemma and his decision on whether he should use or not use, as he was approached by teammates and told he could be magnificent, fantastic, the greatest thing on earth if he were to use steroids and banned substances. We'll talk to Garth about the dilemma he went through in his career and how he came out on the other side later in the show, so stay tuned for that. Right now, we are joined by Ben Nichol, the Senior Media Relations Manager and WADA spokesperson. Ben, thanks for coming on the show.
That's a pleasure to join.
Well, we are coming off a fantastic conversation with David Howman, who is the director general there at WADA, and it spurred on a conversation that is actually quite interesting. And it comes down to this. Every athlete in sport, pretty much any serious athlete, will be touched in some way by PED and doping, whether it's directly, indirectly, or whether they themselves at some point face the moral and ethical dilemma of whether they should use or not. And I think a lot of athletes don't realize the number of resources out there and the support out there that is out there for them through organizations like WADA.
Yes, and no, I think that's a fair reflection. I mean, we live in a world now where sport is a huge business. There's a lot of money at stake, huge incentives to win, and that really instigates the decision by some athletes, unfortunately, to choose the path of doping. But we do a huge amount here at WADA to create a culture where they can choose to compete clean, to win clean, and to really take the right decisions, not just for how we want to see sport and how the public wants to see sport, but also to protect their health. And we have a number of initiatives we have in play. We particularly concentrate on education, so they know what they can and cannot take, concentrating on athlete awareness, so they are aware of the substances on our banned list, they're aware of why they're on the banned list, and they're aware of what their rights and responsibilities are in the anti-doping process as well. So education is absolutely key.
We're talking with Ben Nichols, spokesperson for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Ben, you know, I think one of the key factors in this whole scenario is trying to understand why athletes go to the dark side. Now, that might seem like a fairly straightforward, plain statement, but it's not always quite as simple as fame and fortune. We know some athletes are playing sport to support their family and pay the bills. We know some athletes are using to potentially avoid injury or recover from an injury. We know they use to extend careers. There's lots of different reasons. It comes down to individuals. But I think if we can get a grasp on why athletes use, we probably have a better shot at helping athletes understand that there's options out there for them to achieve, you know, greatness, career longevity, and their goals in sport.
That's right. And there is a huge amount of pressure in modern day sport. As I touched on already, there's a lot of money at stake. So there is a temptation to win at all costs. And what we're seeing as well is it's not just athletes who take the decision themselves. It is entourage members. So support personnel. There have been cases across the world where coaches, doctors have influenced athletes in the wrong way to dope. So we now have rules in place that cover not just the athletes themselves, but those entourage members supporting them so that they can't be associated with them. So we're very aware of the influences. But of course, there's other aspects to take in mind. There's national pride, competing for your country, competing at the highest level, a boost to your profile if you can make the team. And unfortunately, not everyone upholds the same moral standards that others do. And they get tempted to cheat, but it's our job to try and provide a level playing field through the initiatives we do, through the culture we try and instill, which we think really reflects public opinion. They don't want to see cheating on the field of play.
Well, and I honestly do believe that most athletes don't want to deal with it either, especially, you know, when we went through the sort of the dark days of Major League Baseball, when the tests really started coming out, the positive tests and the accusations, and when players were found guilty, there was a great divide in baseball. And it was interesting to see a lot of veteran players come out very vocally in the media and say, hey, look, there's guys out there who are using, who are actually making me think about using when that would never have crossed their mind before.
Yeah, and that is worrying. It's regrettable. There are, you know, we see cheating in all parts of society, so we are not so naive to think that it won't exist at all. Our job is to minimize this. It is to protect athletes' health, and we're a body that represents the clean athletes. We want to give them confidence that there is a body out there representing their interests so that they know they can compete on a level playing field where they know there are strong measures in place to catch athletes that want to cheat. And so that the clean athletes, those that uphold the right standards and ethics, have a body that backs them up. And we feel we do that in a number of different ways. You can take our compliance program, which ensures that organizations do the right testing and have strong rules in place, smarter testing techniques, investigations. Of course, the athlete biological passport is a good way of athletes demonstrating they have a clean profile. So there are a number of steps that athletes have in front of them that show they have our backing.
We are talking drugs in sports. The big question, to use or not to use. We're joined by Ben Nichols, Senior Media Relations Manager for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Ben, you mentioned something very interesting and very powerful, and that is environment. Major League Baseball has taken great steps when we look at professional organizations, to put together what very well may be the most powerful doping program in all of professional sports. But then we look at something like the Russian Athletic Federation, and we see that an entire federation getting banned from international competition. What an extreme in terms of the two sides of this war on doping in sport.
Indeed. And what we saw from that exercise is, I think we need to take a step back and think, a few years ago, the World Anti-Doping Agency could not conduct, within its powers, it could not conduct investigations. There was much more reliance on blood and urine testing. It conducted an investigation into a big country's track and field program. And look at the result. A report came out, some serious repercussions with, as you say, the Russian Athletics Federation being suspended, the lab being suspended, the anti-doping agency being suspended, which means that they have to up their game and meet a whole lot of quality criteria over a period of time to show that they have a good system in place. Now, this was a cultural issue as well, and the report highlights that. But I think what we have to take from that is we back up the clean athletes through the work we did in that investigation, and we're now seeing strong steps taken to reassure them and reassure the public that there's a good system in place.
And that's very important, and that's exactly what we need to see. But what a powerful shot across the bow for the AAF and for WADA, just letting everybody know that, hey, you're going to get caught. You guys are on the fence out there, and you're keeping an eye open, and there's procedures and protocols in place to, again, as you mentioned, protect the clean athletes.
That's right, and it's important to note that anti-doping today in 2016 is about much more than scientific testing. We have our traditional urine and blood analysis, and that is can be effective if used in the right way. But we have investigations. So as we've seen in many cases, including in the United States, whistleblowing testimonies, that can be evidence which can bring to account those looking to cheat. The athlete biological passport, which follows an athlete's blood levels over a period of time, so we can see if there's any spikes or any suspicious readings there. That's another way, an intelligent way of looking at whether an athlete's been doping or not. We have, as well as investigations, we have good education programs in place. We do a lot of research and social science research so we can understand why athletes choose to dope. There's a huge amount we're doing and a number of tools in place looking to really back up the clean athletes' rights.
We're talking with Ben Nickel, the Senior Media Relations Manager for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Ben, there's been a growing, conversation, and we talked to David Howman about this last week, about maybe potentially looking at legalizing some of the currently banned PEDs for the sake of athlete health and injury management. Now, I really do believe this is a slippery slope to go down. HGH is sort of right in the center of this conversation. And I think that's something that we really do need to talk about intelligently. I am personally hoping it doesn't go that way. I'd rather see guys focus more on proper nutrition, sleep and rest, and using all the science and technology that we now have in terms of athlete development, rather than going to some of these currently banned substances to help manage the grueling grind that is professional sports.
That's right, Jeff, and we would encourage athletes to take the right steps with their health, their nutrition, their diet, their exercise, to be able to compete at the highest level. There is no need to turn to banned substances, and I repeat, some of these are dangerous. We have seen them abused in the past, and it's not the right way to go. It's not fair on those athletes, the majority, who want to compete on a level playing field in a clean fashion. So this isn't the right way to go. But what I would say with our process, we have a banned list that's issued every year. It can be updated more regularly if necessary. And that includes a wide consultation period with experts throughout the year so that they look at what's on the list, should it be there, does something need to be added. There's a huge consultation that goes on. So this is an evolving list of substances and methods which are banned. So we are constantly alert to new things that need to be added.
We're talking with Ben Nickel, spokesperson for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Ben, you know, you talk about the banned substance list, and that is a powerful tool. Athletes who are competing internationally or even professionally now really need to be familiar with this. It is a tricky world out there, especially when we look at supplementation, using medications even for the most simple of reasons, from the common cold as an example. But there are WADA guidelines for banned substances, and that's something that athletes should be aware of, most certainly.
That's right. It is. It's a tricky world. It's a complex world. Like I say, we have a prohibited list, which does evolve based on expert opinion from the field. But if anyone is in doubt as to whether there is something they should take or not, they really must, first port of call, they should check with their anti-doping organization. They have systems in place where you can search for substances, you can check with the right personnel, you can carry out due diligence so that you don't make mistakes. So strict liability and athlete's responsibility is really underpins the world anti-doping movement. So athletes are responsible for what they take. Therefore, they must carry out the right checks, and if in doubt, don't take it.
Right now, Ben, there's a lot of third-party, I guess, certifications out there right now in sports saying clean sport or certified for sport or safe for sport. Where does the World Anti-Doping Agency stand when it comes to these sort of third-party verifications or certifications that supposedly deem supplements safe for consumption for competing athletes?
Yeah, we don't endorse supplement companies. Stick by the principle of strict liability and say to athletes, you must look at the rules. You must be aware that what you ingest, what you take, is your responsibility. There are channels, as I mentioned, through their anti-doping organizations and sports federations to check on substances, to see what the ingredients are. And that is really the right way to go about it. We must err on the side of caution with supplements because, as we know, there have been cases in the past where some have proven to be contaminated. And on the subject of contamination, I would say our new rules, the World Anti-Doping Code started in 2015, that gives greater flexibility for cases where it can be proven that something's been taken that was contaminated. So the rules allow for arguments to be heard if things were taken innocently.
Right, because there are some stand-up great ambassadors for sport who get caught up in that dark, shaky world that is the supplement world and even the medication world where there's honest mistakes made.
That's right. There have been cases of that in the past, and that's why our rules have been updated to allow the flexibility so that an athlete's voice can be heard and a sanction, if there is one, can reflect what the specific circumstances are of that case. So I think that's a fair reflection, and each individual athlete's case is different, and the rules reflect that well.
Great, Ben. Well, hey, we really appreciate your time today. A very important conversation for athletes, parents, and coaches out there. If people want to get more information, where would you recommend them looking?
On our website, we have a great deal of information on there, not only on the prohibited list and the code, which are detailed and fundamentally legal documents and scientific documents. We have a huge amount of material they can look at on there. For athletes, we have what we call an athlete reference guide to the code, which is a more digestible version of the rules in place. And we have all of our partners, so depending on which country or sport you're from, all of our signatories have their own websites, have their own personnel who can take people through the World Anti-Doping rules and describe what they are and why they're in place.
Great, Ben. Well, an important conversation. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Jeff.
There you go. A very important conversation for athletes, parents, and coaches with Ben Nickel from WADA. There are resources out there. You just have to tap into them. When we come back on Crush Performance, a very important conversation to use or not to use. We speak with an ex-pro athlete who was faced with that very moral and ethical dilemma of whether to use steroids or not to use steroids right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
Listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, And welcome back. I am Jeff Grishel. The con man is behind the glass keeping us on track, and we are Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you want to get to us with any questions, comments, or smart remarks, please do so. CrushPerformance.com is our handle on the internet. Today we continue our discussion on drugs in sports, and we are joined right now by my good friend and Crush favorite, Garth Orge, former Major League Baseball infielder, coach, and manager. Garth, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. You and I have worked together for years and years through the Blue Jays as we were both helping the minor league developmental system come together. We also both coached in the big leagues together, which was a fantastic experience. But you had a long and storied career. You came from a family of athletes. You had brothers that played. That must have been a great environment to grow up in.
That was. I mean, we played every sport when we were growing up. And, you know, our family loved athletics. My, you know, came from my dad, but everybody in our area, in fact, the town was so small that everybody in our town, you know, played Little League Baseball that my dad actually started. So it was a great environment.
That's fantastic. And, you know, when you got into professional baseball, this is a great story because you don't see too many players nowadays that start with one team and end with one team. And then, heck, you went on to coach with that team and manage with that team as well. So that's a fantastic thing. Garth, we just got off a very powerful conversation last week. We visited with the Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, just talking about the status of doping and where we are in sport. And, of course, Major League Baseball just recently handed out its first lifetime ban. And just as we head into spring training here, we have a couple minor league pitchers, one for the Athletics, one for the Braves, testing positive, getting suspended. It's a real concerning thing. But, you know, for a player like yourself who's gone through a professional career, A to Z, and now you're involved in the developmental side, you've seen the pressure to play, the pressure to succeed. It's not as easy as people might think from the outside, I guess.
No, it's not. And the money involved is tremendous. And the things that you can do and set your life, you know, set you up financially for life, it's an amazing and very tough decision to make for these guys. Very, very, very tough for these guys. So I really feel for them, and I understand what they're going through.
Well, the question today is to use or not to use. There's been some discussion out there now about legalizing certain banned substances like HGH in particular for the benefit of player health and recovery from injury. We know, you and I have talked about this at length, baseball might have the most grueling competitive schedule of all of the professional sports. Day in and day out, you guys are playing 162 games in 180 days, and it's grueling. You get to a point, maybe not just in a year, but maybe over the career, where, you know, you got to think that most serious athletes will be touched, either directly or indirectly, and some of them might even face the moral and ethical dilemma of whether they should use or not, just because of the way sport is organized nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the competition, I mean, when you look around it, there's 30 Major League Baseball teams. So that means in the world, there's 30 shortstops, there's 30 center fielders, you know. So, I mean, to get to that point and then not only get there, but then to have to stay there and to fend off your competitors, I mean, it is a tough, tough game.
We're talking with Garth Orge, former Major League Baseball infielder, played your entire career with the Toronto Blue Jays. Maybe walk us through your career. How did it go down for you? And, you know, you came through sort of an era where I think maybe the drugs were just coming into the game, maybe. What was your experience?
Well, my experience was kind of unique because I was just an innocent kid. Like I said, I came from a very, very small town. And so I really wasn't aware of anything. I was just going out there and playing all the time. And so when I got drafted, and then I got originally in 73, I got drafted by the Yankees. And then in the expansion draft, the Blue Jays took me from the Yankees. So I spent a year in the minor leagues with the Yankees, I mean with the Blue Jays. And then I got to the big leagues, and then I physically, mentally, probably more mentally than anything, I wasn't ready to handle what was going around me. So I got sent down and spent another year in the minor leagues, and then got back to the major leagues and ended up staying there for the next, you know, 9 years. So it was tough. It was fun. it was a great experience, and, you know, I love being a Blue Jay.
Yeah. Hey, Garth, if you look back at that time where you were up to the big leagues and you got sent back down, do you think there's a tendency to rush young, great talent? I mean, we see it all the time, and it's not an easy conversation because at one point you want to get these guys into the environment where they're going to get challenged at the highest level, but if you put a player there too soon, it's not always as productive as you might think.
Well, no, it's not, and there is a mentality that a player has to possess to know that he's good enough to play there, and I think that's different for every player. I know when I went up at a young age, I think 21 or 22, I was not ready.
Yeah,
I just was not ready, and so I struggled, and so I got sent back down. Now the second time I went up, I was completely ready. And so I was ready to take off. But I think that's so different from player to player. Some guys can handle it. Some guys can't. And, you know, I don't know what the formula is where a guy can handle and a guy can't. But I know for me, you know, I needed to get there. I needed to get sent down. And then I realized after I got sent down, I said, oh, I really messed up and I need to get back. I can do everything I can to get back because I know I can play there.
Yeah. Hey, Garth, did you get, and that was my question right there, did you get the feeling that you knew you played with those guys, you were among them, and you knew you could get back there and hang with those guys?
Yes. Yeah, it was really a strange situation I went through. But, you know, it is so hard. And I don't think baseball is unique. I don't care if it's hockey, basketball, whatever. But I think there's a time when you say, man, I can play here. You know, I belong. And when that happens, and that's not physical, that's mental, I think that you're well on your way to doing okay.
Yeah, that's great. We're talking with Garth Orts, former Major League Baseball infielder, coach and manager as well. Garth, you've been at every level of the game, and we know it's as competitive in the minor leagues as it is in the big leagues, but you said something really interesting earlier on. You said getting there and staying there was a whole different story. Now, I've had the luxury to be around, you know, elite athletes in a multitude of sports, and I frequently ask them, you know, is it harder getting there or staying there? And almost every athlete, without question or pause, says staying there was harder. You know, you had a great long career. As your career went along, did you start thinking about that stuff, or was it just day to day for you?
I don't know if I ever thought about it. I just thought that once I started playing, you know, I felt like I was good enough to play. And then as I got older, the game got less enjoyable. You know, as crazy as that sounds, and I don't know. I just kind of like when I started having bad years, I attribute it to that hunger was a little bit gone for me. Now, some guys are different. You know, some guys can go ahead and play 20 years. I couldn't do that, not with the way that I did my thing, not with the way that I lived my life and other things that I did. So it was hard for me to, you know, to get a year, you know, where I was going to play 15, 16 years.
Right. Well, Garth, now we look at your career and, you know, you know as well as I do, baseball had some dark days when it came to doping in sport. And we all, you know, looking back in retrospect with all the data and all the evidence that's out there now, we all knew it was there. You know, you got to understand that, you know, most athletes are going to be touched by it, whether it's a competitor or a teammate using some kind of PED. Or whether an athlete themselves is faced with that moral and ethical dilemma of whether they should use or not. And you went through that exact thing. And that's why I'm so excited to talk to you today, because I don't think we talk about this enough, Garth. What is it like to go through there? How do you prepare young athletes for what they're going to face when they get there? But this conversation, I think, and your story when it comes to PEDs and how you came to get to that point where you're actually sitting there morally and ethically questioning if this is the right thing to do or not. I think it's a great story, and I'm glad you're willing to share that today.
Well, basically, we were coming back from a road trip on the West Coast. It was coming close to the end of the season. And a couple of my teammates, and these guys were veterans, and they were very good players. And they come up to me, and they, you know, they sit down beside me on the plane, and they said, hey, we got to talk to you. And so I said, yeah, go ahead and talk, you know. Two guys that I respected, two guys that I really liked. And they said, you know, do you know how good you could be if you use drugs? if you use steroids, you realize how good you could be. And that's the first time that ever happened to me. I had never seen it or heard of it. I was just kind of oblivious to that kind of stuff. I'd never had that, and it kind of shocked me. And I really didn't know what to say to him, you know. And I, you know, because I never even had a thought in my mind about that stuff.
Right.
And so as time went on, this even got, you know, to the last couple of days, one of my teammates, one of the guys, came up to me and said, I'm going to send you some stuff. He said, and I'll send you how to work out and how to get ready and what you do, the cycle and everything. And I said, okay, send it to me. Because I didn't know what to do, you know. So sure enough, after I get home, after the scene's over, a couple months later, I get this package in the mail. And it's nothing more than steroids. And I absolutely agonized over this. I had so much trepidation. I didn't know what to do. Because on one hand, I knew they were right. I knew that if I took this, that I would be a better player. No doubt in my mind. If you're bigger, stronger, faster, you're going to be better. I mean, they even said they saw the ball better. And I said, boy, if you can see better, I mean, that blew my mind. I said, you see better. And I said, you know, so I was sitting there thinking, man, if, you know, this would make me better. There's no question in my mind this would make me better. At the time, was married. I had a few kids. I had two kids at the time, two children. And I was sitting there thinking, man, you know, and I can take care of their future. I know that I can. It would be okay. I know I'll be all right. And I was really, really trying to justify doing it. But in the back of my mind, I knew it was wrong. I knew it was wrong. And I don't know how many sleepless nights I had. And so finally, one night, I wake up and I'm thinking about this. And I said, I got to get rid of the temptation. So I got up in the middle of the night, took the drugs, and flushed them down the toilet. And it was out of my mind, and I never did it. I never took anything, never took an amphetamine at any time in my career. I never did one thing. I think the strongest drink I ever had was the Coke. And so that was basically how I did my career. Did I make the money that I could have made if I made those choices? No, I didn't. But looking back on my career, I'm really proud of the way I handled myself. I'm proud that, you know, I can talk to my kids and say, hey, you know, I may not have been great, but I did it right. You know, so that was, that makes me feel good. And so basically, you know, and there's the morality of it was something that I just couldn't get around.
Garth Orge, former Major League Baseball infielder, played his entire career with the Toronto Blue Jays. This is an unbelievable story. Garth, how many players, if we look at Major League Baseball right now, the minor leagues, let's look at every sport. Just forget about baseball for a second. Let's think about the high-pressure world of world-class Olympic sports and professional sports. The entire Russian Federation has just been banned by WADA, for crying out loud. They're going to miss the Olympics. It's crazy. But, Garth, how many young athletes, older athletes, athletes getting towards the end of the career, go through the same dilemma that you have gone through? And, boy, oh, boy, what a battle it must have been for you.
It was, but I think there's a lot. I think it has become very, very accepted, and I think the testing, you know, has gotten to the point where guys can beat a test. And so I just think that, you know, it's really prevalent. And I think it's, you know, when I watch a pitcher, and I've known some, and I watch them today, and when I watch them, and they were, you know, 10 years ago when they were in their late 20s, they were, you know, throwing 92, 93. And now, you know, at age 37, 38, they're throwing 97 and 98 with better stuff. I got to think they're doing something. I just do. Your body just doesn't work that way.
It's hard not to think that. And unfortunately, now every athlete who performs well in a sport is sort of, you know, drawn in by that cloak of gray and suspicion that, hey, there's something going on. We're talking with Garth Orge, former Major League Baseball infielder, about his incredible story of whether he should use or not use performance-enhancing drugs. One thing I really prided myself in, Garth, was either taking small groups of players, or heck, it might even be a team team meeting, but I always would always let the guys know in pure 100% confidence that if they're using, this is what I would say to them, guys, if you're using, I'd like to just see what you're using so you're not going to hurt yourself or maybe even kill yourself. Because you get into some of that black market stuff, that's a dangerous world to get into. And then I would also say to the guys, listen, if you're thinking about using, let me know. Let's talk about options and things you can do to reach really high levels of performance without going to the dark side. And I think that's a conversation we need to have more with our young athletes.
I agree. And I think all trainers or all strength and conditioning people need to do what you did. But unfortunately, I think you were in the way minority, you know, of people who did that. And I just wish that guys would, you know, because there is alternative ways. There is better training habits. There is things that can make you better and, you know, give you the endurance to last for the year. I just wish there were more people like that, like you, in the game today, where, you know, a player's safety is not compromised.
Yeah, and that's really what it's all about, player safety, longevity, and life after the game. I mean, you made it through the game. You played with guys who made it through the game. You came out on the other side, and things are pretty good. You had a chance to coach and even manage young athletes coming up, and the game always does give back, doesn't it?
It does, and you know what? More than anything else, I go to bed without any guilt. The pillow's soft, you know, I go to sleep. I think that's huge, you know, knock on wood, I feel healthy. You know, I'm 61 now, and I feel healthy. I feel good. I feel like I can do anything I basically want to do. So that's the other, you know, side effect of it. And there is, I mean, if you look at a baseball player at 35 years old, you know, he's basically done unless he's just a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, your career is really, really short. And there's a big life after that out there. And so, boy, for 10, 12 years to, I don't know, boy, it's a tough thing to do for me. It'd be a hard thing to tell anybody to do that.
Well, it's a worthy conversation to be certain, Garth. We really appreciate you sharing your experiences there. It's a conversation we need to hear more often, and I think it's important that we share with every parent, athlete, and coach that's involved in sport. When we come back, let's shift gears and talk a little spring training and international development with our good friend, Garth Orge. Stay tuned. More Crush right after this. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Kershaw. If you want to get in touch with us, crushperformance.com. Today, we are wrapping up our look at drugs in sports. We're finishing up a great conversation with our good friend, Garth Orge. Garth, I'd like to switch gears a little bit. It is spring training. Pitchers and catchers have arrived, and it's a great time of year for baseball. Now, you and I have also had the opportunity to get involved in the international development game. We spent time in Africa in December, and what a great thing it is to see baseball expanding globally. But the game being developed in countries like Ghana and Nigeria and South Africa, it's just fantastic. What did you think of your experience over at the African Elite Camp in December?
That was amazing. That was so much fun. And I still am in contact with all the coaches almost on a daily basis. I'm sending them tips, and the players text me, and they, you know, they message me, and we're messaging back and forth. I drive my wife crazy because, you know, they're 9 hours ahead of us. And so, you know, I get these texts at all times of night. And so it's, but, you know, I love it. I love helping them. I love doing what I can do for them. And the enthusiasm they show for the game it's amazing.
Well, Garth, we know that, you know, the coaching side and the coaching development is as important as player development, and that's something we're pretty passionate about. So it's been interesting to see that the, you know, the MLB has been spending so much time and effort in developing the coaches in all these countries around the world.
It is. It's great. I hope it continues. I hope they realize the great work that's being done, and that they continue it and they fund it better and they get more guys doing it. But, you know, right now I'm going to be managing the German team in the WBC qualifier down in Mexicali, Mexico. And, you know, I'm looking real forward to that. So, you know, it's just so much fun.
Well, developing a coach is as important, and it's as much as a process as developing the players. I know you had a chance to manage. It's not something you just step out and do. Even though you played all those years, there's an art form to coaching and managing, isn't there?
There is. Because, you know, when I was a player, I was concerned about, you know, doing my job for my team. You know, I wanted to, you know, be able to control the bat, play good defense. But I really didn't give a whole lot of thought about our pitchers and our catchers, what they were doing, if it didn't, you know, if it wasn't with me, if it didn't matter to me or concern me on a different play or whatever we were doing. So when you go out there and you start managing, where you're managing outfielders, catchers, and knowing when to take a pitcher out and knowing all those different things, it was just so much fun to learn. And the learning curve for me was steep, but it was fun and I enjoyed it. And I learned so much and expanded my knowledge of the game. So I feel confident now, you know, that I can do it. And I can pass that knowledge on to other people who are, you know, experiencing the struggles when I first started.
Yeah, great stuff, Garth. Well, listen, really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for sharing that story. It's very important, I think, for every parent, coach, and athlete who are involved in any level of sport to hear. And, of course, being involved in the game development. Keep up the great work. It's been a ton of fun. Appreciate your time today.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. My pleasure.
There you go. A fantastic conversation with our good friend Garth Orge, former Major League Baseball infielder, coach, and manager, all-around great guy and crush favorite. A very important conversation as he talked about his experience with steroids in sports, the dilemma of whether he should use or not to use. A teammate actually sent him steroids in the mail in the offseason, and he sat there debating whether he should do it or whether he shouldn't do it. He knew it would probably maybe help extend his baseball career, maybe help him become a better player. Now, whether that's true or not, I can't say, but you gotta know that almost every single serious athlete in sport will be faced or touched by, in some way, shape, or form, PEDs and doping in sport, whether it's a teammate or whether it's a competitor or whether it's a dilemma that you might have. Personally, a very important conversation. Here's what I want everybody to know. There are options out there. I think one of the reasons that athletes use and go to the other side is because they don't know what else to do. Yes, fame and fortune, no question about it. But also the idea of taking care of your family, maximizing your earning potential, staying valuable, being important, staying in the sport. There's many different reasons you might go to the dark side, but I want everybody to know that there are ways to do it without going to the dark side. There's great resources at WADA. There's great resources in every single country's affiliate, and there's ways to do it. We have helped athletes reach human maximum performance drug-free, and I think it's an important conversation to have because I really do believe most athletes, fans, and people around sport want to see good, clean sport. Well, I got to thank everybody for coming on today. I got to thank Ben Nichols from WADA and Garth Orge, of course, for sharing his story today. And I want to thank you for listening. Next week on the show, well, it's baseball season. We've got to talk a little more baseball, but we're going to put a twist on it. We're going to look at successful cultures, winning cultures. What does it look like? What are the pieces of that puzzle? And how do you put together a championship team? It's going to be a day with the Los Angeles Dodgers as we visit with crush favorite Chris Woodward, the infield and third base coach for the Dodgers, and the new vice president of baseball operations, Alex Anthopoulos, as we talk about his transition to the West Coast and his idea of what it takes to build a championship team. So tune in a day with the Dodgers next week on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.